I am pacing the presentation at a good speed for everyone. The objectives for session 5 today are twofold. One, to review the key components of what we would consider effective continuous quality improvement related to nutritional care, and to actually review a continuous quality improvement assessment tool that you can use to monitor both mealtime nutritional care processes as well as any between meal snack programs that you might have in place. And for slide 3, the first point that I want to make is that you'll notice throughout this talk that we place a lot of emphasis on care processes, nutritional care processes, as opposed to clinical outcomes. I think we're all abundantly familiar with the minimum data set derived quality indicators, including the prevalence of unintentional weight loss. And that's, you know, those NPS-derived indicators are, there's a whole host of them that anyone who works in a nursing home is probably all too aware of. And one of the most important pieces of information that I want you to take away from today's session is that continuous quality improvement really has to focus on the daily care processes that we believe are related to those clinical outcome measures, and less so on the clinical outcome measure per se. I mean, if you go into a nursing home facility that has a high prevalence of unintentional weight loss for their residents, you know, it's not enough to just say, okay, well, we need to work on reducing our weight loss prevalence rates. You know, we're too high. I mean, what does that mean? What do you actually have to do differently on a daily basis to change that prevalence? And I think it's also equally important to recognize that there are, you know, a subset of residents who, for a variety of different reasons, are going to continue to lose weight, you know, even if your absolute best nutritional care practices are in place. And a continuous quality improvement program will focus on things that are in the direct control of staff. In other words, are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? And, you know, not inappropriately blame staff for a weight loss episode that truly was not preventable, you know, truly could not be prevented.
Can I just interject really quickly here, Sandy? Because of some of the nursing homes that are taking this course are also taking the incontinence management one, and everything you just said applies to monitoring that intervention as well, and probably almost any daily care intervention in a nursing home. It cuts across, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely, yes. And you know, the same is true for any of the MDS-derived quality indicators. You really have to, you know, break it down to, you know, what are the specific daily care processes that we can focus on for the improvement, and less so on your overall prevalence rate per se. So slide number 4. So why do we focus on feeding assistance? Well, we know from the numerous research studies that we've done that the adequacy and quality of daily feeding assistance care provision represents a key daily nutritional care process. We know from randomized controlled trials that if we improve feeding assistance care quality, either through mealtime assistance or offering additional foods and fluids, i.e. snacks between meals, and that's maintained over time, that will have a significant effect on residents' total daily caloric intake and weight loss and body mass index. It's a much more immediate measure than weight loss prevalence, and the amount and the quality of the assistance provided by your staff is actually within the control of your staff. You can do a good job with feeding assistance care, but you may or may not be able to ultimately prevent a weight loss episode within an individual resident, even though overall we know that for most residents it will have an effect on weight status. So it's a much more meaningful daily care process to focus on standpoint relative to weight loss prevalence at, you know, one point in time, according to the MDS. So slide number five, what do you need for a continuous quality improvement information system to actually be useful? Well, you minimally need information that is specific, that's timely, and that's accurate. So what do I mean by that? Well, related to specific information, slide six, the typical documentation, for example, that we see related to feeding assistance care provision is just either a simple checklist of whether or not it's provided for each meal or documentation that it's provided on an as-needed basis. And then, you know, the total percent eaten values that people document three times a day, 7 days a week. And this is kind of the bare bones documentation related to feeding assistance and percent eaten that you see in pretty much all nursing home records. Slide seven gives you an example of much more specific information related to the amount of assistance, the type of assistance, and even also more information about the resident's response to the assistance. For example, you know, Mr. Smith received 15 minutes of assistance, and he, you know, the type of assistance included both physical assistance and verbal cueing, and, you know, his response could be not only percent eaten, but, you know, whether or not he refused food or refused staff, staff offers of help, whether or not he had complaints about the food, you know, other referrals that might need to be done, whether it's, you know, to speech or, you know, OT for concerns about swallowing or the need for a plate guard or large-handled utensils or other things that might help Mr. Smith to eat more independently. So there's lots of other information about how the feeding assistance care is being provided and how the resident is responding to it beyond just that very simplistic sort of yes, no, percent eaten. Timely information. What we have tried to do, this is slide eight, is link specific daily care processes to, you know, a specific time, a day, a meal, and a person. And we've translated this information into summaries about the quality of nutritional care. And the advantage of these quality summaries or quality indicators is that then you can start making valid comparisons either across different meals, different shifts, or before or after you've instituted, you know, some type of change. You know, for example, there's lots of facilities right now who are making changes in their dining programs as part of all the culture change initiatives, you know, whether it be family style dining or buffet or, you know, various different things. And the question always arises is to what extent those types of, you know, changes in the dining programs are actually having an impact on residents' food and fluid consumption. And so the nice things about or staff's ability to provide good care. So one of the nice things about these summary measures is that you can also look at, you know, how you're doing before or after you've implemented some type of change within your facility. So to give you an example of what I mean here, slide number nine, so information related to specific time and person, you know, we would say something like, Mr. Smith received less than 5 minutes of assistance and ate less than 50% during lunch on June 16th. And a quality summary that would be derived from that type of information for multiple residents is, you know, something like, well, 75% of the residents who were rated by staff as in need of assistance received less than 5 minutes of assistance during lunch on June 16th. So what this tells you is not only that there was a problem with inadequate assistance being provided to an individual resident, but that this was a prevalent enough problem, at least on this particular day during this particular lunch period, that we need to take a closer look as to, you know, is this a common problem during all lunch periods? Was it just, you know, a problem on this particular day because something else was going on that day? Maybe you were working short-staffed. Maybe there was, you know, some other event that was interfering with lunch. So it helps you, the quality summary helps you to not only get a feel for how pervasive the problem is, but also helps you to begin to, you know, problem solve so that you can do something about it, i.e. continuous quality improvement. So the timely piece, you know, why timely is important, you know, is what I've already alluded to. This is slide number 10. It helps you to identify factors related to variable care, such as working short-staffed on particular days, you know, activities or other things that are interfering with staff's ability to provide care consistently. It also reduces your subjective interpretation of what's going on. I alluded to this too. You don't, just because, you know, I hear a lot of nursing home staff complain that surveyors come in and they see one resident, you know, off in the corner, for example, you know, asking for toileting assistance, and the resident, you know, and the staff don't respond right away. And then they get written up, you know, they get a deficiency for not responding to the resident's request for toileting assistance. And they have really no way of knowing, you know, all sorts of things. One, it's a related incident where, you know, this one resident asked and people didn't respond. Or does this happen for, you know, most of the residents most of the time? And you know, and they also don't even know other things. You know, maybe the resident was just taken. Maybe they repeatedly asked for assistance, even after they've just been provided assistance. You know, there's all kinds of subjective interpretation that happens in the survey process and, you know, and also in internal quality improvement efforts, just based on individual differences between staff members. So the CQI tool that we're going to review today gives you a much more objective, standardized way to look at your nutritional care practices so that, you know, regardless of who's looking at them, you'll walk away with the same conclusions about quality. And the CQI tool that we're going to review today also will help to serve as an audit of the medical record in terms of it gives you, there's a couple of different things that we ask you to compare to your medical record documentation so you can get a feel for within your own facilities how accurate or inaccurate your own documentation might be. And that will help you to know, you know, how much you can rely on that documentation versus how much you need to be, you know, looking at another information source for certain aspects of care. Accurate information. This is slide number 11. As we've talked about in previous sessions, there definitely are limitations of the medical record in terms of how accurate it is for a couple of different reasons. It's the accuracy of what's documented is not audited regularly by internal staff. It does, you know, we have to be honest about the fact that medical record documentation does serve a significant purpose in regulatory compliance. Surveyors spend a lot of time looking at medical record documentation, making sure all your T's are crossed and all your I's are dotted and that information from one section of the record corresponds to information in another section. And I think we spend, you know, an enormous amount of time making sure that our documentation, quote-unquote, looks good, irrespective of whether or not that translates into daily care that consistently looks good. And we know, I believe I covered this in the very first session, but just as a reminder here, we've done several different studies showing that the medical record documentation is, in fact, grossly inaccurate for many care processes, including feeding assistance care provision, percent intake, supplement delivery and even monthly weight values and associated weight loss episode identification. So those are kind of four primary nutritional care processes that you would look at in the record, and none of them are terribly reliable based on documentation alone. So what we conclude from all of this, slide number 12, is that observations of care delivery are not only essential, but can fulfill, you know, all of these criteria specific. And that, you know, the good news is that, you know, unlike toileting assistants, for those of you who are, who've been going to the incontinence module training sessions as well, nutritional care is much easier to observe than most other daily care areas because it occurs at relatively predictable times. You know, everybody knows when the meal trays are supposed to come out. It also happens multiple times a day. You've got three meal times and then three between meal periods. And it also occurs in a fairly predictable location. You know, most staff know where and when, you know, people eat, whether they're eating in their rooms or the dining room, for example. So, you know in advance when meal service is going to be and when to target your observations, which makes it much more manageable from a quality improvement standpoint. Slide number 13 gives you some general rules of observation. We recommend that you similar to the very first session where we were talking about just general meal observations to identify residents who are eating poorly.
To unmute your line, you press pretty much the same or pound six.
For quality improvement purposes, you observe roughly five residents in the same area. Some people observe as few as, one or two or three residents, and other people are comfortable observing, six to eight residents simultaneously. As you gain more experience with the tool and with observation in general, you'll find that it's relatively easy to observe as many as six to eight residents at a time. But that's assuming that they're eating in the same area or, multiple rooms along the same hallway. So you definitely want to keep the residents that you're targeting for observation in close geographic proximity to each other. And use our standardized form and definitions, which we'll go over today. For continuous quality improvement purposes, we recommend observing anywhere from 1 to 3 meals a week. If you don't have significant concerns about your care quality, then, one meal a week is sufficient. And, if you do have concerns, if you're trying to get a handle on what it is that is interfering with staff's ability to provide good care, then you want to go for more, 2 or 3 meal observations a week. Obviously, the more information you have, the better. And then I'll take you through the form and how to calculate those summary care process measures that I gave you an example of earlier. So the nutritional care process measures represent defined nutritional care processes that are specific observable staff behaviors and staff behaviors that can be observed either during and or between meals, and then can be summarized into these quality indicator summary scores that yield an overall percent pass rate that ranges from 0 to 100%, where a higher percentage is always better. So the percent pass rates are helpful in terms of gauging sort of where you are at any one point in time. For example, you might find that your percent pass rate at breakfast and lunch is 70 or 80%, and your percent pass rate for dinner is only 30%. So you know right away that dinner is much more problematic than breakfast and lunch. Or, certain days of the week might be more problematic, or, weekends might look worse than weekdays. So those percent pass rates give you a way, again, to make comparisons across meals, across days, across shifts, or before and after a new you know, dining program or a dining program change has been implemented. We've derived these nutritional care process measures related to three different aspects of care. This is slide number 15. One, the accuracy of medical record documentation, so this auditing piece that allows you to see how accurate or inaccurate your own data within your own facility is. Two, the adequacy or the amount of feeding assistance is being provided. And then three, the quality of the feeding assistance is being provided. So an example, slide 16, of a care process measure related to the accuracy of chart documentation is if a resident eats less than 50% of a meal, then their chart documentation for the same resident, the same meal on the same day, should show a value that's equal to or less than 60% for the percent eaten. So if basically what this means is that if you as a supervisory observer, if you're watching a resident, you know, on a given day during a given meal and you note that they ate less than half of what they were given, then you should be able to look at what the nurse aide or other staff member documented in the chart for that same resident meal period and see that the documented value also shows that they ate poorly. Now you'll notice two things about this particular measure. One, it's focusing on residents with really low intake, you know, those are, who are eating less than half of the meal. And two, it also allows a margin of error. You know, we're not looking for perfect agreement here between you as a supervisor and then what someone else documented in the chart. What we want to know is that if you're, what you want to know as a supervisor is that if you're noticing that someone is eating poorly, then their chart documentation should reflect that they're eating poorly. That's the goal. Slide number 17. These are two different care process measures related to the adequacy or the amount of assistance. One is if a resident eats less than 50% of the meal, then staff assistance should be greater than 5 minutes. And the second one is if a resident is given a supplement with the meal, then staff assistance should be greater than 5 minutes. So, again, we're focusing on those with low intake, people who are eating poorly, those who are eating less than 50% of the meal, or those who are getting a supplement with their, you know, during the mealtime period. And secondly, we're also focusing on a minimum level of staff attention. We actually know from our observational data that the 5 minute cutoff point is a good cut point in terms of residents who receive more than 5 minutes of staff attention on average receive 10 to 15 plus minutes of assistance, whereas those who receive less than 5 minutes are basically receiving tray delivery and, you know, maybe a little bit of tray setup or verbal cueing at the point of delivery, but not really anything else after that. So when we get to the tool, you'll notice that we have that more or less than 5 minutes. It makes it much easier for you to observe because you're not having to track the assistance in its entirety, but it gives you a very meaningful cut point. Basically, are they getting staff attention or are they not during the meal? And it's more problematic if they're not getting staff attention and they're also eating poorly, i.e. less than 50% of the meal. And the supplement one is really trying to capture residents who are being given a supplement during the mealtime period in lieu of good quality assistance to promote consumption of a served meal. You really don't want to see oral liquid nutrition supplements being given with residents' meal trays or during the meal itself, unless staff have spent some time, more than 5 minutes, trying to encourage the resident to eat what's on the meal tray. It's, you know, the supplement really should be kind of a last resort, and oftentimes it's used as a substitute for good quality assistance. So that's what that measure is really trying to get at. Slide 18. These are examples of measures that are related to the quality of assistance. If a resident is independent in eating based on observation, then staff should not provide physical assistance to eat. And the second, if a resident receives physical assistance to eat, then staff should also be providing verbal cueing. So these are based on several different studies showing, first, that we know that the provision of verbal cueing enhances both oral food and fluid intake and a resident's independence in eating. And if a resident is capable of eating independently, but they, for example, just eat very slowly, what we don't want staff to do is to, you know, intermittently come up to them and basically provide physical assistance to eat in an effort to kind of hurry them through the meal. I think, you know, anybody who's worked in a nursing home for very long has seen that happen. I certainly have seen it happen a lot. And, you know, instead, what you want to see your staff doing is, you know, verbally cueing and encouraging the resident to eat more and allowing them to eat independently. And slide number 19, these are also additional examples of care process measures related to the quality of assistance. Is observed to eat less than 50% of the served meal, then staff should offer an alternative, and all residents should receive social interaction during meals. The rationale for these two quality measures is that, one, the availability of choices as well as social interaction not only enhances the resident's food and fluid intake, but also enhances their quality of life. The availability of alternatives to the served meal is a big part of the Culture Change Initiative. It's also officially now a part of new federal regulations and something that survey teams are going to be actively looking for. And a lot of facilities have handled this by posting, you know, what the entree options are for the day. But what's really important even beyond that is that, you know, after a resident is served, for staff to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, a resident is eating poorly during a given mealtime period. You know, just because they say they wanted the chicken and rice, you know, the day, you know, several days ahead of time or even on the day of, you know, when it's actually sitting in front of them, they may or may not decide to eat very much of it. And so ideally what you want your staff to do is notice when somebody is not eating very well and say something to them, you know, are you not liking the chicken and rice today? Would you rather have the beef and mashed potatoes, you know, or a sandwich? You know, can I get you something else instead? So that's what we're really trying to pick up on here. And then the socialization during meals is just something that's applicable to everybody and definitely has been shown to enhance both food and fluid intake for all long-term care residents, as well as depressive symptoms and just sort of general quality of life measures as well. Slide 20. So taking these measures, we have collected data in a number of different community nursing homes. The data that I'm presenting in this table shows you what the percent pass rates were for these different measures in about 20 different community homes across the country. And so to take you through a few of these as an example, for example, that very first indicator related to the accuracy of the percent eaten chart documentation shows you that for those residents who we were observing to eat less than 50% of what they were served, the chart documentation showed a value equal to or less than 60% only 38% of the time. In other words, the remainder, the overwhelming majority of the time, the chart documentation was not reflecting the poor intake. So plenty of room for improvement there. We also saw that there were a lot of residents who were eating poorly and not getting staff assistance during the meal. They were, you know, going unrecognized by staff. You know, these 20 different homes had only a 21% pass rate on that less than 50% and more than 5 minutes of assistance. Most of these residents who fell into this category were residents who were capable of eating independently, but they just ate poorly on their own. So there are those that I have talked about in previous sessions that are easy for staff to overlook because staff are so busy, understandably so, spending all of their time and energy focusing on those totally physically dependent residents who require full physical assistance to eat, and therefore they have little to no time remaining to pay attention to independent eaters who are eating poorly. Very few alternatives offered when residents ate poorly. Only 25% of the time did we see staff actually offer to get the resident something else if they were eating poorly. Facilities do much better on if they're providing a resident physical assistance to eat, but they're also providing verbal cueing in the context of that assistance. They received a 65% pass rate overall for that. But social interaction was pretty infrequent and low for all facilities, with only a 24% pass rate. So plenty of room for improvement across these facilities, but you can also see how these percentages give you a very meaningful way to compare things over time. Maybe a month later you look at this and your percent pass goes from 38% to 50%. Well, if you're just looking at 50% in isolation, it doesn't look so great. But if you know that you started out at 38%, then you know that you're improving. You know that you're headed in the right direction. So it gives you a way to meaningfully track, are we doing things differently in a way that's making it better? Slide number 21. Who should be targeted for continuous quality improvement observations? Well, residents who you have determined to be responsive to mealtime assistance or snacks between meals based on evaluation. Residents who are already rated by staff as in need of mealtime assistance or snacks between meals, so either based on the MDS eating dependency item or, already having documentation that they're supposed to be getting supplements or additional foods and fluids multiple times a day between meals. Residents with a history of weight loss, and then, of course, anybody who you just routinely need an assessment on anyway, whether they're a new admission or a readmission post-hospitalization or anyone, do an MDS assessment. Those are sort of easy ones to target because you need updated information about their nutritional status and how they're doing anyway. Someone had informed me that the American Dietetics Association has recommendations for how a nutrition care plan should be structured that involves four key steps. And when I was looking at these key steps in the nutrition care plan that was recommended by the ADA, it was pretty easy for me to cross-reference each step with the tools that we've been talking about in these sessions. The initial assessment step in terms of identifying whether or not there's a problem certainly maps well with our, session one content and how to initially conduct meal observations to identify residents who might be eating poorly, as well as the other assessment protocols that we provide on our center website related to the medical record review and screening for depressive symptoms and chronic pain and nutrition preferences and things like that. We provide standardized assessment tools for all those aspects of the assessment piece. The identification of the problem, step two, in most cases it's a combination of poor intake as well as, good feeding assistance practices not being in place at all or not being consistently provided. Nutrition intervention, this would be the sessions two and three, the meal evaluations and the between meal snack evaluations. The nice thing about the between meal snack evaluation is that it allows you to evaluate whether or not supplement orders and or offers of additional foods and fluids are being provided. So the evaluations give you a way to evaluate whether or not mealtime assistance works, whether or not snacks work, and whether or not supplements work, which are the three main nutrition interventions. And then the monitoring and evaluation step four, is this session. It's the CQI piece, with the point being that once you have identified those with poor intake and those who are responsive to mealtime assistance or snacks, then, the next step is making sure that they actually get it consistently on a daily basis. And it's the making sure that they're getting it consistently on a daily basis where the continuous quality improvement piece comes in. So I want to now, for the remainder of the session, I think Annie does have one. The very final slide just gives you information about the next and final teleconference and related reading assignment, is in addition to submitting your resident data forms, which are required in order for you all to get the continuing education unit. So be sure to do that. But in addition to the PowerPoint slides, everyone should have also gotten in a previous email, and then I emailed it again today just to make sure that it was easily accessible, a copy of the continuous quality improvement form for meals and also a continuous quality improvement form for between meal snacks. And someone at some point had asked me for some suggested language for care plan, for the assessment and the care plan piece for the record. So I included an attachment related to that as well, even though it's my understanding that a lot of nursing homes are now using the ADA guidelines to outline their care plan language, very consistent with this four-step process. But the continuous quality improvement form for meals, what you'll see on that form, and hopefully you have a copy of one in front of you.
And if
there's a place at the top to put the date of your observation, your initials or name as an observer. I want to again remind people that the observer doesn't have to be someone in a supervisory position. I've trained nurse aides how to do observations. I've trained activities personnel, administrators, DONs, other licensed nurses, social activities. I mean, just pretty much every level of nursing home staff I've trained in how to do CQI related to nutrition. So these are, you know, intended to be very straightforward and relatively simple, so that really most anyone can do it, even though I definitely have found that nursing has an easier time because it just comes more naturally to nurses. But the intent of the form is that you list the residents' names on the form that you're targeting for observation on a particular meal during a week. And remember, too, you're not trying to observe everybody. You're not trying to observe all meals across all days. You know, you're picking one or two meals a week for a group of 3 to 5 residents who you're concerned about, according to the selection criteria that is on the one slide. And you also don't necessarily have to observe the entire mealtime period. We found that basically most everything that's going to happen happens within the first 30 minutes, and oftentimes within the first 15 to 20 minutes. So, you know, you don't have to, entire mealtime period lasts an hour. While it might be extremely informative for you to watch for the entire hour, you don't necessarily have to watch for the entire hour. You can watch for the first 15, 20 minutes and then come back toward the end of the meal to capture total percent eaten at the end. And these checklists, it really is intended to be just kind of a present or absent thing. There's very abbreviated definitions at the bottom of what we mean by physical assistance, verbal instruction, social stimulation. We have a separate column for whether or not a supplement was given during the meal, primarily because that's not really something that you want to see happen very often. And as I indicated before, under the assistance time, just whether or not it's more or less than 5 minutes, and your estimation of the resident's total percent eaten, and, you know, really you just want to know whether or not it's more or less than 50%. And then two columns related to what's in the medical record documentation for the same resident and mealtime period, mostly so that you can compare what you've observed and documented to what's in the record, again, so you can get an idea of how accurate or inaccurate the documentation might be. And then the indicators at the bottom really take you through each one in terms of how to calculate those care process measures in the same way that I summarized in these slides. So hopefully the slides as examples will help you to do the calculations. If any of you start using this and find it confusing or have questions, or please feel free to email me or call me. I'm happy to walk you through it. I have some other forms with, just kind of mock data so that you can practice calculations. I knew we wouldn't really have time for that today. We also have some Excel databases set up so that you can enter these data and it will automatically generate graphics for you so that you can track the percent pass rates over time. So if anyone is interested in those, I'm happy to give you access to those as well. It's our intent that these forms are fairly self-explanatory and straightforward. You'll see that there's some additional pages to the meal CQI form that actually takes you through the indicators and the scoring rule and the rationale and what the training goal is. So hopefully with that information, you'll be able to do this on your own. And the between meal snack one is even more simplistic just because there's a whole lot less going on between meals. I think I'm going to stop there in case anyone has questions. It looks like we're right at the 140 mark, right, Annie?
Yep. And hold on, if I get there, I'm going to unmute all of us. Group mute all.
The leader has muted your line.
No, I'm supposed to unmute. I had a quick question for you while I'm trying to do this, and that is, if you discover you're not that strong in some of these areas, what's an easy strategy for improving performance of your staff? Oh, did you hear that, Sandy? Oh, wait, Sandy, I got you muted too. Sorry, I muted everybody by mistake. I am now unmuting everybody.
Okay.
Did you hear my question about, do you have a strategy for improving staff performance if program monitoring discovers a problem?
Yeah, we've actually found, for example, we have a couple of different projects that we've done where we give staff feedback about how they're doing. So we tell them what they're We explain what we're looking for and why. For example, why socializing with the residents during mealtime is a good thing and something that we want them to do. And we let them know from week to week how they're doing. So if they start out at a 20% pass rate, we say, well, we're noticing that this is something that we don't do very often, and we'd really like to see more of this for these reasons, because it encourages the residents to eat more. It impacts, improves their quality of life. And then you monitor it again and you give them feedback. And we've seen that kind of feedback, letting staff know specifically what it is you want them to do differently. Like when you're providing physical assistance to eat to a resident, we want you to be talking to the resident at the same time. Even if the resident can't talk back to you, then, you should still be telling the resident what you're giving them a bite of, what you're giving them a drink of, what meal it is, what day it is. You should be cueing them, orienting them in some way. And that kind of very simple, straightforward, specific feedback on a weekly basis, staff respond really well to that. We've seen huge improvements.
I mean, that's also in line with culture change in terms of empowering your staff with this quality improvement information. I mean, there's
right.
no point in collecting this information if you're not going to use it in some way.
And it doesn't have to be formal or fancy. This is feedback that we provide in less than 10 minutes, at the nurse's station when people are sort of gathered around. And the other big advantage that we found is that it it creates a really constructive dialogue between the direct care staff and the supervisory staff, because you have nurse aides who start asking questions like, well, you know, but I really have a lot of trouble feeding Mr. Smith. You know, he's really hard, and he clamps his mouth shut, and he refuses food, and, you know, I don't know what to do with him. I try to provide help, and he tells me to go away, you know. So you start a conversation about what it is that the nurse aides are experiencing that's interfering with their ability to do a better job. And then, you know, it allows the nursing staff to actually help the nurse aides problem solve and, you know, do something different. And then the nurse aides start sharing strategies with each other, too. Like, oh, well, I found if you do this, then he responds much better. And we're always amazed at how much information one shift, you know, maybe the day shift has figured out all kinds of great strategies for a particular resident, and the night shift is totally oblivious. You're like, nobody ever, you know, communicated any of this information to the evening shift. So that's another advantage of those feedback sessions, is that as a, you know, supervisory nurse, you are the link between those shifts, and so you can make sure that that information gets shared across shifts so that it's to the benefit of the resident.
Now, does anyone have any questions about any part of what we've talked about over the last 5 months? We're going to be going into a period where we have a two-month hiatus. I will be doing coaching calls just to see how everyone's doing and to, you know, offer help if you need it. But questions not only related to program monitoring, but any of the other mealtime observations, feeding assistance, and so on. Anybody shared experiences? I've heard some great stuff from people on coaching calls about, you know, focusing in on a solution for a particular resident as a result of this project. In one case, it involved a tray position. Don't be shy.
I think everybody is shy.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody does, I feel like we've really covered a lot of information in a short time period. I always feel like there's so much more I could say. I mean, I could spend an entire day on each one of these topics in isolation. So if you have questions, please feel free to call me or email me, you know, related to any of the tools, any of the assessments. I'm more than happy to provide, you know, some one-on-one guidance or coaching or, you know, whatever you need to make this work for you and be clinically useful with your own residents in your own facility.
I'd just like to make a comment.
Sure.
This morning there was a situation with all the input you've given us. It's been very good and very helpful. And we've made a lot of progress, and we've seen that. It is that we are benefiting our facility. This morning, we're challenged with a resident who is very small, and she weighs close to 79 pounds as well.
Oh, wow.
She's got a diagnosis of dementia and depression, and she saw the doctor. Well, when all the staff got on board, and we offered her food all the time during her waking hours, and we always provided her. Well, we've seen her bump up 4 pounds.
Oh, great.
And so this morning, for instance, we're trying to get her on a little schedule, which is going to help her because she used to sleep through breakfast. And so now we're trying to establish a little routine with her, and the doctor saw her on Monday, and he said that he does not feel she's depressed. It's her dementia, and her body is telling her she's not hungry enough to eat. Despite the fact she's got vision problems, she can't see that well, she can't hear that well, and she wants what she wants, and she will not accept assistance because she's very capable of feeding herself.
Uh-huh.
So today we offered her hot cereal this morning, and she was in the dining room an hour before the end of the meal. I told her I had an Italian pastry for her, and I paid a lot of money for it, and everybody else is asking for it, and it's just for her. And we all left her alone, and do you know, we were bringing all the residents out of the dining room, and all of a sudden she grabbed it and she started eating it. And that takes a lot to constantly, we had so many people trying to get her to eat.
Yeah.
And back off and when she see she was a little irritated. But then we got that and we left her and eventually she grabbed it and she started eating it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was just another tactic, how long it took before she started to eat.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a great story. I really appreciate you sharing that. I mean, and you definitely, there are definitely those residents who don't respond well. You know, they need those consistent offers multiple times throughout the day because they're going to only eat that really small amount at any one given time. I mean, she's a great example of that. But they don't respond well to a lot of assistance and encouragement from staff. You have to be really subtle about it. And that's really important for staff to know because you end up, you know, it's not only a waste of staff time to try to provide an excessive amount of mealtime assistance, but it ends up being counterproductive, you know, because the resident's irritated and not, you know, responding negatively to it. So
we also, what we also did is we brought in for another resident who needed queuing, just someone to sit with her, we brought in our scheduler 5 days a week for 2 meals just to sit there and converse, and we've seen a weight gain there.
Great.
Our staff from physical therapy, other staff nurses off and on, so we are providing our residents, most of the ones who need assistance, at least 45 minutes for these meals because we also have other volunteers or the families that help us. So we're very fortunate and we're seeing results as for this.
Well, that's great. That's so great to hear. And that's another good example of how a variety of non-nursing staff can be utilized, you know, effectively during meals. That the socialization and the verbal cueing, I mean, that's, you know, those are things that can be done by, you know, just about anybody who enjoys talking to the residents. They're really easy things to do. So it's, you know, if you do have the ability to engage other, you know, departments or types of staff during meal times to just kind of float around and do that, or, you know, try to sit residents together at a table who are likely to benefit from that, that's a really great strategy from a staffing perspective.
Yeah. We've even given them a banana splits at breakfast time, ice cream, whatever they want.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're making me hungry.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other stories from the field? Well, Sandy, I want to thank you so much for taking your time and everybody for joining us today. Like I say, we're always available. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.